It's motherfucking America Day, bitches!
Actually, it's the day after America Day. It's the 5th. You ruined it. We don't know what days are anymore.
Well, we're recording on the 4th, and the 5th is still close. I mean, technically, we'd actually declared our independence on July the 2nd, and then the document was signed on August 2nd. So the only reason we celebrate the 4th of July is because it's when the final draft of the Declaration was written. So really, it's a bullshit holiday anyway. But anyway, America.
Wouldn't America Day be Thanksgiving? Because that's when we all sit down and just eat until we go into a coma. Why isn't that America Day?
That should be America Day.
I mean, it's a day we celebrate killing off a third of the originals of the country. We sit down, eat a bunch of turkey, and fall asleep while beating each other up to shop. I think Thanksgiving is the true American holiday.
Interesting perspective, Al-Qaeda!
Oh my God.
Yeah, people don't know that Spivey is secretly Al-Qaedian for weeaboo.
Listen, today's the day when we as a people pretend to set aside our differences and all unite under the common cause of scaring the shit out of our collective dogs. Speaking of which, Nathan, how are your pups holding up?
Not good, man. Like, every freaking night. And because I live next to a theme park relatively, like, it's just... ugh. Poor doggos, poor anxiety-ridden doggos, too, so, like, not fun.
Nathan, I understand. Yeah. My cat yesterday, the one that stays outside, was howling trying to get inside when they started firing off. And I was like, I can't let you out. My window's too high up, and I'm too used to reach down and pick you up.
It, like, doesn't help that the white trash family across the street is, like, going ham on, like, the fucking fireworks, too. Like, they're taking advantage of the fact that, like, Six Flags is firing off bullshit all the time, so they're just like, you know what, let's fire some shit from the backyard. I'm like, god damn it, I hate this place.
See, here in Nebraska, fireworks are actually legal, or at the very least legal adjacent. You can get them really easily is the thing. And a bunch of people have decided to fire them off just in the apartment complex. I was walking to my office from my house, which are both in the same complex, and I was just like walking along the parking lot, and suddenly this giant like pillar of flame appears in front of me as this rocket shoots into the air. This couple is laughing from their back porch. It's like, what the fuck's wrong with you? The worst part is, first of all, I'm saying this because they've been doing it all day, every day. So there's a real good chance that while we're recording today, you're going to hear fucking fireworks in the background. And I apologize for that. It's not my fault. But second of all, my apartment complex is surrounded. We're a bit on the edge of town. And we are surrounded by dry, tall grass. Oh, so Lord. Some dumbass is going to just fucking start a fire. I know it.
This is Ike Holtman's last day of being alive.
Probably. Right. I may make excuses to be somewhere else this evening, just in case. Just take my most precious valuables, which are my Doom 2016 Collector's Edition, and nothing.
I can't blame you. I will be having to go into where I stay and work right at 10 o'clock, right when all the fireworks stop happening and the drunks come out and start to play.
The drunks come out.
Yeah, so...
yeah. And by drunks, we mean patriots. Hell yeah, America Day! Try desperately to find some vestige of patriotism deep. Ooh, so deep, so buried in your soul. Maybe there's some part of you that can still enjoy America, but in the meantime, we can all eat hot dogs. Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Hey Poor Podcast. It's about video games sometimes. Joining me is the beautiful Nathaniel Terencio.
Nico, Nathan.
And the equally beautiful Anthony Spivey.
So you say if we can find anything that's good about being American, but there is one good thing about here, and that is we are getting an officially translated version of the novel, where a man gets reincarnated into a vending machine and has to live in a fantasy world where people drink out of him.
Oh, where yes, we are?
Yep.
Oh,
that is
yes.
Getting an official translation.
Bless.
And I am already prepared to buy a first edition copy and do my second official book burning.
I'm fucking with you. I'm with you, man. Anime vending machine. Let's go.
See, he's excited because he wants to read this. I'm excited because I want to experience doing the same thing I did with Sword Art Online's first light novel book and just like, get on fire.
Yo, we need some vending machine representation in anime. That's all I'm saying. I want some self-insert vending machines right now. I mean, let's go. Let's go. I'm all about it. I mean, I'm down for Centaur Life, so let's... I'm down with vending machines. Let's go.
The question is, does the vending machine have a vending machine half-sister who he starts dating?
Oh, God. Damn. That's the sequel.
That better not be Volume 2.
Hey, at anime, hire me.
Volume 2. My vending machine sister can't possibly be this cute.
Nathan, I will leave. I will leave this podcast. Do not bring
but we
up
have a, that. But we have a title right out the gate. My vending machine sister can't be this cute. I mean, we've nailed it. We can just shut it down.
There are two things that will get me to leave. Making Orimo references or making the other god-awful thing that he just made ending references.
Oh, God, I hate that thing, too. God. I gave that a chance for some reason, and it hurt. I don't know why. I think it's, like, because the character designs are cute, and then I watched one episode, and I wanted to, like, I wanted to burn my eyes. Like, it was so bad.
I have no idea what we're talking about, but anyway. Here's what we will talk about in a moment, is in the first half of the show, we like to talk about the video games, movies, etc. we've been playing, and then we will answer some audience questions. I think we got some good ones, and then we will talk about the news, which is loot crate heavy, unfortunately. But in the meantime, Anthony, what have you been doing this week?
So, I did finally get to play a game for review because I've been waiting and life has been preventing me from playing that much. So, if you haven't known, even though it's like one of the highest selling PS4 game releases in quite a while, the Crash Bandicoot Trilogy Remaster came out. The insane trilogy. Yeah. And 2/3 of it are fucking great, and the other one's the original Crash Bandicoot game. I really enjoyed like growing up with Crash Bandicoot as a kid. It is a very good series overall, especially on the original PlayStation. The remastered makes the game look actually pretty damn beautiful for what it is. The game, for a remaster or a remake, it looks probably one of the best I've ever seen in any remake. It makes every Square Enix remake look like a piece of shit. They've done with the controls of it is actually extremely faithful to the original game, which is pretty shitty actually with the first Crash Bandicoot game. The soundtrack is phenomenal. You can tell that the people who did the remake actually cared about the product they were remaking instead of just doing it for a quick buck, which is a really good sign. Unfortunately, the original Crash Bandicoot age like when you leave milk out on the refrigerator out of the refrigerator for like a month and a half, and it just becomes like some sort of nasty pudding. Mm-hmm. So it plays like garbage. There are a bunch of just obscure things where if you didn't grow up with Crash Bandicoot, you're not going to find any of the secrets to get 100%. Like the colored gems, they're still just completely ass backwards to complete and find. They did fix a few things on there, like you are now able to save everywhere on every level instead of having to beat a bonus level to save, which is a really good improvement. When the dinosaurs or whenever something changes you in the games, they will actually count when the boxes break in order to get you your 100% collection. That's good, but while Crash 2 and 3 are legitimately excellently good games, I still recommend those two out of the three, but if you didn't grow up with Crash Bandicoot 1, I can't recommend it, even though it's Naughty Dog's like one of their first games, and it's like the mascot of the original PlayStation, arguably. I can't
Plus, it's just like Dark Souls.
No, I wasn't going to mention that. I don't know why that was allowed to be published by anybody. Fucking... Crash Bandicoot is the Dark Souls. That review is the Dark Souls bad reviews. Sorry. If you don't know, I don't remember what website posted. It's like, oh, Crash Bandicoot's just became the Dark Souls of platformers. No, platformers were always fucking hard as balls. You just haven't grown up because you're probably 12.
Yeah.
I'm convinced that person did not play Crash Bandicoot growing up.
Yeah, man. I tweeted you about that. Like, I forgot what day you tweeted that, but, like, I tweeted you about that, and I was like, I remember playing that game as a six-year-old, and, like, it was really hard. Like, it was, like, that was one of the things about the game. It was, like, it was notoriously hard for a platform game.
Like, all of them are still really hard games. They haven't, like, increased the difficulty. Like, when I say it's incredibly faithful, I mean, it is to the point where they created the difficulty the exact same. So it's... Yeah. If you're not used to it or you don't have the dedication for it, you're not going to 100% any of those games. I'm not to when I'm reviewing it. I played for most of the three games overall, but there's no way I'm going to 100% any of them by the time I write that review fully.
Understandable.
I'm too old and jaded to be able to spend like 20s of hours on a single level trying to beat or trying to do it.
Right. So. It just annoys me that now Dark Souls is like the... Like, Dark Souls didn't invent games being hard. You can say that a game is hard. You could even complain about the Crash Bandicoot games being too hard without having to mention Dark Souls. They have nothing to do with each other.
No, it's
right. That's really what annoyed me about the whole thing, is it was just an incredibly lazy comparison. Like, there was another site I saw that some people were making fun of that kind of compared it to Binding of Isaac.
Yes, I saw that too, and no.
Which, yeah, that's also not a great comparison, but at least they are both platformers. Yeah. That's something.
No, Crashformers are Crashformers. What the fuck?
Crashformers.
I literally should be asleep about 2 hours before recording this. Anyway,
we all woke up early, and we forgot to mention this. We all woke up early to accommodate Jay, and then Jay was unable to attend.
Jay has something called real life to attend to.
He got turned into a vending machine, and it lives in a fantasy world now. And
God, it sounds like such a Nathan.
No, Nathan, yours, no, Nathan, no, yours isn't that. No, I know what your fucking concept is, which also is a legitimate light novel that came out of Japan, but is not getting translated yet. Yours is the dude who gets reincarnated in a fantasy world as a hot tub, where girls go in to rejuvenate themselves. That's your concept.
You know, I'm not even gonna lie, that is my concept. Thank you, Spivey, you know me so well.
I hate the fact that I know this. I hate the fact that I went on some website and it's like, hey, this book's coming out in Japan. Don't you want to read it? Isn't it so wacky? No, it's not wacky. It's the worst. And I hope the dude who sold it got, like, 3 copies. And 2 of them were from his mom. So, but anyway.
Okay, I found it. It was Games Radar was the Dark Souls review. They said, the controls just mean that Crash Bandicoot has become Dark Souls.
No, they've actually fixed the control. Okay, that is another thing on there. I do want to say, so, when they say that Crash Bandicoot becomes the Dark Souls, no, they actually made it easier because the original Crash Bandicoot, you can't play that with an analog stick. It's only with the D-pad because it was made before the analog stick was really even a thing. No, you can play the game full analog stick now. So they made it technically easier. So it's not the Dark Souls, it's the Mario 3 if they're going to do anything, because it's an easier game to play.
Yeah.
Crash Bandicoot's the Festus Quest of arcades, if I'm going to say anything. There. I'll make the...
Festus Quest is kind of fun. Mm-hmm. But...
Anyway, the other thing I did was Netflix released the first 13 episodes of Little Witch Academia on Netflix.
Yes.
And I'm really pissed off at Netflix because they have a policy where they have to have this full show ended and then another season of anime to end before they will actually show the first part of it. And because Little Witch Academia was separate into 2 seasons, one airing in the winter and one airing in the spring of this year. So when now that spring's over, they can show the first 13 episodes, even though the show's already been done and over with in Japan. It's ass backwards, so that's why, and because I love the studio so much and I want to support Studio Trigger, the people making this, I had to wait for goddamn forever for the show to be done and over with so I can watch it on Netflix. And I am very, very grateful that I did. And Jay, when he comes back on probably next week, and knowing my luck, I won't be on, he can attest to this. It's a very, very well done anime. So, people who don't know, Little Witch Academia is about a commoner girl who gets, who basically goes into a school to learn magic. It's kind of like Harry Potter, in the way of where she doesn't really have magical powers innate with her. She just goes into a school that already has magic as just a way of life. And it does it very well in terms of she's really shitty at magic. She doesn't really know how to cast anything. But the way the world is surrounded, you can tell that there are rules to everything, but they don't really care about the rules, if that makes any sense. I'm trying to figure out the best way to describe this.
I think it makes sense.
Yeah, so Studio Trigger is one of the... It's a pretty new anime studio. They're the ones who did the Kill la Kill that was really popular back in the day. It was done by the former people who did Gurren Lagann, which was an insanely popular and also extremely good mecha anime that came out from Gainax before they transferred over. So this studio is known for its wacky visuals and just off-the-wall like color transitions and everything. And Little Witch Academia is also has that in droves, which makes me incredibly happy. Everything about the show, even though you can tell it's done on a budget, was done at just the amount that makes it beautiful for how much it would actually cost. You can tell that they didn't waste the money in terms of showing everything in the thing, unlike most anime where you can tell, oh, this was budgeted, this is done on a shoestring budget because they aren't doing anything. They're just standing still talking the entire time. This show does even little things in the background, even when people are talking to, like you will just watch as people like train or fly on broomsticks as everything goes. It's very well done in that aspect, where even though it is done on a budget, you can tell that they actually gave a shit about it. It's a very episodic show as well. It's even though it's all one storyline, you can pretty much watch one episode in any real order and you won't miss much of the story, at least with the first 13 episodes, which is really good as well. It's also not like surrounded with fan service, which a lot of anime these days are, where they're like, oh, look, the girl's almost showing her underwear, and she's like just showing her leg, and her breasts are showing all the time. This is how we're going to sell people, because we're going to get poor Japanese people to buy our shows, because that's all we can do is show people's breasts instead of, you know, telling a story. And Little Witch Academia, you could probably watch this with kids on there, with your kids if you have any, or younger like siblings, and they would be enjoying it just as much as you will. It doesn't have too much along the lines of, oh, I can't show this to anybody of any age. So I'm really excited that that came out. And I watched that in two entire sittings, 13 episodes. I had to get up once to go to sleep because I was up for like 36 hours. And then I woke up and then I watched the rest of it right after that. So
there you go.
That is how I do my trash anime watching. I watch everything in as little sittings as possible. The Little Witch Academia game for PlayStation 4 is also coming to the West, which is both incredibly shocking and incredibly happy for me, because I know actually a few people on the Hey Player site, like me, Jay, and I think Kevin, were also pretty excited that this game's actually being translated and brought over, so that makes me happy, so...
Good stuff.
The other thing is, for people that do care, Summer Games Done Quick started this past week, so it'll be day four by the time this episode comes out. It's really good. It's people beating games extremely fast for charity. The last time I checked, it had over $200,000, I believe, already saved up for people donating it. So it is done for a very good cause, Doctors Without Borders. So I would recommend checking that out if you're a fan of Twitch streams or just wanting to watch people beat a game in under a few hours. They have a Kingdom Hearts 2 final mix this year, I believe on Thursday. It may be Wednesday, I'm not entirely certain, I didn't read the full schedule, where that game can take up to like 40, 50 hours to complete fully, and they're beating it in less than 4. So, or as of this recording, they just beat Tony Hawk Pro Skater 4 in under an hour, which if you don't know the exact way to do it is insane. So I recommend watching that, donating a little bit, even if you have just only a little bit, because everything helps and it is for a good cause. So that's everything
always.
I've done.
I always enjoy the games done quick streams. I like speedrunning in general, and because I know that this is something that a lot of our audience is interested in, they are doing a Doom 4 speedrun. That'll be late tonight, so when this episode goes up, it'll actually have already happened, but you'll be able to see the replay, of course. They're doing it in 90 minutes. If you've never seen a Doom 2016 speedrun, I highly recommend it, because being a Bethesda game, it is broken as fuck, and it is really interesting to watch people just basically bypass the entire, like, all of the game.
There was one year where they did Skyrim, and even though I hate that game, this aesthetically, everything about it turns me off, watching them just destroy that game in under like an hour just to beat the entire thing is insane. I mean, incredibly, like, just fascinating to watch as they did everything they could to just destroy it.
Yeah, you can't even like keep track because they just clip through everything. It's a good time. So yes, yeah, so good cause, good time.
That
summer game's done quick.
That is all I've done. Hopefully Jay can be a little bit more articulate with the Little Witch Academia next week when we can see him, and he can attest that it is a very good show that everyone should watch if they have Netflix. I don't care. The dub is also pretty good too. It's not my favorite, but like if you're one of those who can't stand listening to Japanese people or reading subtitles while watching your shows, the dub is acceptable, and it's in four languages as well, so if you just want to listen to it in Spanish, go right ahead. It's there. So, that's all I
have.
There
you go. Nathan, what do you have for us?
So, before I start off with what I played, I actually want to say that I did a interview with Toshihiro Kondo, the president of Nihon Falcom, which is a Japanese gaming company that I've never heard of. Or maybe I have heard of, but, like, I've never played any of their games personally.
Are they the Yeast developers, if I remember right?
Yep. Yeah, and I actually, that's what I went to interview him about. I interviewed the president of Nihon Falcom, and, like, they pretty much they wanted to talk about Yeast 8, which is coming to the West. It was released last year for the PS4 and PS Vita, and, yeah, like, that was cool. That was really, I'm not going to say too much about the interview. All I'll just say is that, like, it was a very good, like, interview, like, a lot of insight about the game personally, and, like, a lot of cool things about, like, what it's like to be a JRPG or action RPG developer from Japan, and kind of releasing their games to the West. And the guy who, the president himself is a very nice person, like, from talking with him, he has a lot of respect for the franchise because he actually came into it around Yeast 5. And so he's actually, like, it's kind of like the cool story of, like, a guy who really loved the game franchise and then eventually became, like, you know, the spearhead of that franchise. You know, it's cool. Like, he actually talked about how, like, he played Yeast 1 and that's his favorite because that's, like, the first game in the franchise, but also it's, like, a weird game with, like, interesting mechanics. And yeah, like, it's a cool interview. I can't definitively say when that'll come out, but it's, you know, I'm working on it. It's a, like, a 30-plus minute interview. It's a really good interview, though. Like, a lot of depth. So, yeah, hope you all enjoy that. So, for what I played, speaking of more Japanese-related products, I got to play and review, long title, Super Dimension Neptune versus Sega Hard Girls, because
fucking somebody had
video games.
You on the website.
Yeah, and I wanted to review this because I don't know what fucking happened, but in the past, like, almost year that I've been on this site, I have never, like, played a NISA game until I started working here, and now it's, like, Neptunia and, like, the and that whole series, the Hyper Dimension series, is, like, now one of my favorite series, even though they're, like, super flawed. But Super Dimension Neptune versus Sega Hard Girls is a sort of collaboration between Sega and Neptunia. And the plot is really fucking dumb in anime, and it's essentially that video games fucking destroyed the world. So you play this anime girl.
So what's the story? What's the fictional angle on that?
Yeah, so, like, the Neptunia universe is essentially that, like, it's pretty much like a universe where, like, hey, what if, like, the fucking, like, video game companies or, like, the, like, you know, like, Sony, Nintendo, Sega, Microsoft were, like, hot video game girls who can turn into goddess versions of themselves. And, like, essentially... yeah, I know. But anyway, so essentially what happened is that, like, the premise of the game is that you play as IF, who is the anthropomorphic anime girl version of Idea Factory, one of the developers. And essentially, Idea Factory is in a post-apocalyptic universe where she rides a motorcycle, and she's looking for, like, this library that houses all the world's knowledge, because, like, apparently that's a thing, because libraries, like, that house the whole entire world's knowledge isn't, like, a bad idea. So, essentially, she goes to find this library. Shenanigans happen, and the essential plot is that, like, a goddess fell from the sky onto her motorcycle while she's trying to find the library. She gets to the library. Apparently, something is happening where, like, evil is destroying, like, going back in time and changing history, so which led to the post-apocalyptic, like, world that she knows. So, like, the entire plot is that her motorcycle now has the ability to time travel, and she must go with this goddess and save, like, parts, and go back in time and save parts of the timeline. And the goddess is also, like, the anthropomorphic anime girl version of Sega.
Japan is stupid.
I know, like, the more
I'm so glad it's not just me. I was like,
and along the way,
anime, maybe this isn't as fucking stupid as it sounds.
Yeah, it's extra stupid.
Yeah, and so they go back in time, and, like, then, like, that's when the game gets to the normal Neptunia part, where it's like, hey, there's fucking...
This is just food fight with tits.
Yeah, kind of. But anyway, like, and then, like, that's when the game gets to, like, the part where it's like, oh, we're time travel, now we're gonna meet all, like, the Neptunia girls and all the, like, anthropomorphic version of the Sega girls, which is, like, there's literally a character called Sega Genesis, and she's just, like, a twin tail, freaking black hair, like, loli, who's supposed to be, like, the Sega Genesis, and then you have, like, the main, like, characters from the Neptunia
franchise.
I'm
sorry, but if the Sega Genesis was a woman, she would be a MILF, not a loli. Let's get that out of the way right the hell now. Alright, continue.
The lolis would be the Nomad, because it's a fucking handheld and it's smaller. Let's be real here.
So, and then the Dreamcast would be like the creepy cat lady, except instead of cats, it would be the seamen.
I was gonna say, just imagine like just a geriatric old man, and right before he flashes you because he doesn't know what he's doing, it's instead of a penis, it's just an entire seamen colony.
God, I love seamen.
Oh, seamen. Anyway,
we never talked about it. We joked on this podcast several episodes ago, somewhat infamously, about the idea of a seamen HD, which there are rumors that might be happening. Kind of unsubstantiated, but if it does, listen, I will buy a Switch for Seaman HD, or whatever console it comes out on.
Alright,
sorry, continue.
It's just going to come out on the Dreamcast again, and let's be real.
Seaman 2, you have to rebuy a Dreamcast. That would be the most Seaman thing, though.
Dreamcast
That'd be perfect.
Classic. But anyway,
Anyway, back to your stupid shit.
Yeah, back to this stupid
How
game.
How dare you mention Sega Hard Girls in the same sentence?
I know, the fact that that's the title and whatever.
C-Man.
It's Japan, I get it. Anyway, but yeah, like, that's the essential premise, is that, like, the personification of Sega and Idea Factory are time traveling and meeting other freaking properties and then trying to save the world.
I just
want to
say
games.
That I'm reading through your review and it is hilarious. I particularly like the captions.
But I know, right? Thank you.
Everyone, go read Nathan's review. Don't play this game.
Yeah, but like, so the thing in the game is like, and I'm just gonna try to make this as short as possible, is that like, if you were to ask me what the plot was after that, and it's, I don't know, because literally it's just like references to video games and anime tropes, and like literally that's like the entire game. I know there's a like save the world plot, but that's really not important at a certain point, because it's a time traveling motorcycle that carries an anime duo, and they're meeting like anthropomorphic like video game companies as anime girls. Like what more do you need to know about the plot? It's kind of not that important. It's kind of not good either. It's kind of, and also like, I think my biggest problem is that like there's information overload in this stupid anime game, because the lore of the Neptunia franchise is so rigid and deep now that there has to be information overload. But yeah, if you've ever played like a Neptunia game, so they're like turn-based JRPGs, this pretty much plays exactly like those games. They haven't changed the gameplay, and that's like a huge disappointment considering this is a spin-off. I'm one of those people who think, like, hey, if you're gonna do a spinoff, like, at least do something interesting with your fucking spinoff, you know? Because, like, you don't have the baggage of being, like, a main game or, like, part of the main franchise, so you can do whatever. You can take liberties, right? You can take risks. This game doesn't, other than the fact that there's more Sega characters now. And, like, I get the appeal, but, yeah. So, it's, like, it's not a bad game by any means. It's just, like, it's definitely for people who like either Sega Hard Girls or Neptunia. And, like, it'll satisfy you if you like those things, but if you've never...
I bet it will, you disgusting piece of shit.
But if you've never, like, liked the Neptunia games to begin with, or maybe you don't like JRPGs in general, this won't change your mind, which is kind of like the past couple of Nisa games I reviewed, which isn't a bad thing, because I like that, so I can say oh yeah, I thoroughly enjoyed it, but, like, I can admit that, like, if you've never liked a Nisa game, you probably won't like it. Like, that's just
the
truth.
It is what it is.
Yeah. And, like, God, I can't believe I played, like, and I don't know, like, I'm tired of review. I chose to review this game because I like Nisa and I like these games, but I'm getting burnt out on reviewing JRPGs and RPGs in general for the site because they are long and I get, like, stressed out trying to, like, get a good amount of the game done. Like, I don't finish, like, 100%, like, all the time the games I review, but this game was long. It was very long. Like, it was... And I'm just like, it's really long, even though, like, all I'm hearing is just a bunch of anime references and, like, occasional parts is like, oh no, Sega, your skirt. It's like, what? I don't care. What the fuck do I care?
If the Neptunia games were about a third as long, I might have tried playing more than the first game. But they go on for about, 20 hours too long for even the most... Yeah. The only people who can play, I honestly, no offense, Nathan, but the only people who can play, like, Neptunia games are, like, the most hardcore of weeaboos that have to play everything that comes out, because they're the only ones that can understand all the fucking references.
Yeah, no, that's legitimately true.
And people
true.
Who really, really, really want to have sex with a, with a Philips CDI machine, I guess.
There's, okay, like... I'm just gonna say that there's legitimately a character called Plutia in the game, and basically she's based off the Sega Pluto, which is a console prototype that never got released, and her entire fucking character is that she's this, like...
So she's stillborn?
It's this weird character where she's, like, a, like, she's ditzy and kind of weird and slowish, like, when she's in her normal form, and then her goddess form is this weird, like, sadistic, like, dominatrix-y character, but... it's so weird. This game is really weird, but, like, yeah, it's a 3.5 out of 5. If you played an Neptunia game, you've played this one. There you go. What do you expect? It's fucking anthropomorphic video game like mascots. Just go. Like, you know what you're getting into. It's not as lewd as I thought it'd be, and that's the thing with the Neptunia franchise in general. But
which is why he docked it several times.
But time-traveling motorcycles, there you go.
Yeah, it didn't work with Shadow the Hedgehog. It's not going to work here.
Oh, it certainly didn't work. If
he could have motorboated the Wii U, would have been a 5 out of 5, but no.
Fun fact, the Nintendo characters, the Nintendo, like, version of the... Or, like, the anime version of the Nintendo characters, they're all, like, lowlies.
That's
See,
creepy.
I knew as soon as you said fun fact, creepy. It was not going to be a fun fact. It was going to be an unpleasant fact. It was going to make my day worse.
Yeah, and they're all from the land of low Wii because lowly and
oh
Nintendo
my god.
Wii.
Oh no, shut the fuck up. Yeah, oh.
Nathan, you're not allowed to talk about Neptunia on this podcast anymore.
I kind of don't want to. It's kind of trash.
You know what? You know what? You have restored my 4th of July faith in our country, because whatever we may have going on, we didn't do that. That one's not on us.
We may have made Duke Nukem Forever, but we did not make any of the Neptunia games.
Low Wii is not on us. Lord Almighty. Did you do anything else, Nathan?
That's like the big game I played. Everything else is just kind of like playing games
Fair
that
enough.
Either my sister's friends gifted me on Steam or, like, just replaying games that I've never got a chance to finish and still haven't finished because I don't finish video games, notoriously.
Fair enough.
A Centaur's Life, the trailer about the short anime about a girl who's a centaur going to school, just playing constantly in the background.
Ah, God. I'm so hyped. That's my...
Did you listen to last week's episode, Anthony?
No.
He had a whole talk about that, and he actually called you out specifically in anticipation that you were going to give him shit.
I'm going to give him shit. I'm not even going to have to listen to this, because as soon as I saw that, I was like, Nathan's going to watch this, and then he's going to want to talk about it, and I'm going to just scream until he stops. So I'm probably a good thing.
Some garbage is okay.
Garbage is okay.
All
centaurs are queens.
Oh,
all centaurs deserve to go to the fucking glue factory.
God damn.
If you want to fuck Mr. Tumnus, you are valid.
If you want to fuck Mr. Tumfus, you also need to go to the glue factory.
I'm not into centaurs, but Mr. Tumnus could probably get it. He seems like a very compassionate and gentle lover. So I also did not play a lot this week because to peel back the curtain, I don't know why peel back, it's pull back. God, I can't talk today. Yes, to peel back the curtain, because that's what you do with a curtain, like an orange peel. This episode almost didn't happen. It was a whole adventure. And a big part of that was because my laptop died and I had to pay a lot of money to get a specific part replaced. And it's back now, but it means that I was not able to play any video games over the weekend, which is my video game playing time mostly. So I really haven't played much of anything. Game-wise, the only thing I really played was Reigns, which I don't know if you guys have heard of this. It's Reigns.
That sounds like a fake title.
I haven't played it.
Well,
it's
a real game. Yeah, I'm kind of surprised you guys haven't heard of it. It's gotten some buzz. It's was published by Devolver Digital, made by this small, like, 5 or 6 person team. And I got it because there's currently, I mean, all the video game summer sales are going on, which meant that it was $1 on the Google Play Store, and I could buy it on my Android and, play that while my computer was dead. But it's something that I've been interested in for a while. It's kind of like Princess Maker meets Tinder, but not as creepy as it just sounded when I said that.
I'm excited regardless.
Basically, it is a kingdom management game. There's a few of these. You get your Princess Makers, which I don't think are very good. You have your Long Live the Queen, which I do think is very good, where you're managing stats, and you have 4 stats. They are army, people, church, and money. And if any of these get to 0, you play as the king, you die. For whatever reason, you know, you run out of money and the merchants take over or whatever. But also, if they get too high, if they get to 100 out of 100 in each stat, you also die. So you're trying to keep them all in this middle ground. And basically, you do that because these cards appear in front of you and they'll have some person on them and they'll say something to you like, I don't know, we need to build more churches. And then if you say yes, the church stat will go up because they have more power, but the money stat will go down because you spent money to build new churches. And if you say no, generally the opposite will happen. And so it's a very simple mechanic, but it's very hard. You're going to die a lot. And it's really fun. A lot of decisions will actually have consequences, like beyond just what you... You know, beyond that stat change, which is good because it means that there's, you know, you have to think about more strategy going forward. It's not just a stat management game. It also has a really interesting story that sort of reveals itself as you play through it. Because it turns out what's happening is that before the game started, you made a deal with the devil that your reign would last forever, but you never actually specified eternal life. So you're just being reincarnated in the king every time you die and come back. It's the same person because it's you. And you're trying to break this curse so you don't have to do the same endless things over and over again. And the way you do that is really clever. Like, that's the thing about it, really, is it's a simple game. It is a phone game, but it's much more clever than these sorts of games. Well, I won't say than always are, but as many of them tend to be, it's just everything about it, like, it keeps having these twists and turns and interesting things that make sure to keep the game very fresh and very fun. And it's also kind of addictive because it is literally just swiping left and swiping right to make these decisions. You can, you know, you'll be like, oh, it's very much one of those games where it's like, oh, I'll just take a few turns and then you've, you know, played for hours. And I'm already in my second playthrough because it's the sort of game that can be replayed. And yeah, Reigns, highly recommend if you're into mobile games. It's also on Steam, and I've heard that the Steam port is quite good. I don't know. I've only played the Android version, but I've heard it's quite good, and I have no reason to doubt that. It is a very fun, weird little game.
Question. Do you think, like... Okay, if you were to, like, to recommend this to someone, would you recommend, like, them playing it on a PC or getting the mobile? Not in terms of, like... its functionality, but, like, you know, like, because you know how, like, some games
what,
are better played
what type first. Of a game it is. Yeah. Some games are better. Honestly, I think I would say mobile.
All right.
Because I think it is the sort of game that, even though it is, like, I've been playing it for long stretches of time, I think it is a game that also benefits a lot from shorter playthroughs. And if you're not as caught up in the game's world, the cards do start to repeat after a while, and you might find that a little boring if you're, like, sitting down on a PC, you know, this is my gaming time, as opposed to if you're just checking in a few times throughout the day. So I honestly think it is better as a mobile game, but I think it's one of those mobile games that is a high enough quality that it could be either. But yeah, if you're going to get one, especially because it's only $1 if you have an Android, like, right now, like, that's nothing. So I don't know why you wouldn't.
Yeah, for sure.
The other big thing I want to talk about this week, is this the only other thing I have to talk about? Yeah, it is. The other big thing I want to talk about this week, is a film, because I go to see movies a lot. And this last week I went and saw Baby Driver, and I highly, highly recommend it. I don't know. Have you guys, heard of it?
Yeah, I have. And I actually want to see it because it seems like really up my alley. I love the director also. So I don't know.
Right,
I just like
yeah.
that style of movie. So I'm actually really looking forward to see it when I get the chance to, but, yeah.
Sure. So, yeah, I won't spoil anything, but it's been a little obscure here in the States. If you're big into movies, you know, if you're a cinephile, like I definitely would consider myself to be, then you've definitely heard of it. But it's possible that you might not have. So let me tell you about it. Baby Driver is the newest film from writer and director Edgar Wright, who did Scott Pilgrim vs. the World.
Sorry, I knew you'd mention that, but that movie's... the movie's fine.
I couldn't tell if that was a positive noise or a dismissive noise.
Scott Pilgrim is awful. Edgar Wright is...
Oh, he's a bad person.
No, the entire series is bad. Edgar Wright is the only one who can make that series anything good. But I also think it's his worst movie because of what it's based off of. But I can get into that at a later time. I think Scott...
Sure. I think that Scott Pilgrim is somewhat unfairly... Well, I won't say somewhat unfairly maligned. There's a lot of people who love it. There's a lot of people who don't like it. I know that Jay, we've talked about briefly before on this show, Jay is not the biggest fan of it because he feels like it's all about reference humor. But
it's reference
humor, I would
argue, and bad people getting what they want at the end.
I mean, yes. Sure, both of those things are true, but I would argue that it's much more about, I mean, it's about relationships. And I will say this, I saw it at the time when I needed to see it. I won't say how old I was, but I was a teenager, and I had never seen quite as mature presentation of relationships. And the fact that it's, like, being compared to video games, because the whole point of that movie is that, like, it's like video games where you have to work at it and you're going to fail, but you have to try over and over again, and relationships are really hard like that. And also pointing out that, like, it's a romantic comedy where the male lead has to change, and he's not just this good, you know, handsome, beautiful, perfect guy. He's kind of a shithead, and he gets called out on his shitheadedness and does have to change it. And that was, I don't know, that was something that was really important to me, was certainly very instrumental in my understanding of relationships. I would say it's probably his worst movie. But that's not really what I wanted to talk about. I think Scott Pilgrim vs. the World is a fine movie. Edgar Wright hasn't done anything that I disliked. The only thing really, the only movie his name's attached to that I don't love is Ant-Man, which I hate, but he got kicked off that project and they only used like a couple of parts of his original script, so it's, I don't really hold that against him. He's also known for the Three Flavors Cornetto trilogy, which he did with Simon Pegg and Nick Frost, those being Shaun of the Dead, and Hot Fuzz, and The World's End. Shaun of the Dead and Hot Fuzz being his best known films here in the States. Because Hot Fuzz is one of the most American movies ever not made in America.
Speaking of which, this is his fastest, I'm just going to say, with Baby Driver, because that's probably going to overtake it. It's already his fastest grossing movie. Just to let
you know. Oh, yeah, it is. Baby Driver is making a lot of money, and it's making a lot more money than they expected, especially here in the States. And that's something that is, I think, is very good, because I think that Baby Driver definitely deserves it. But talking about this movie and not other movies, basically, you know how it's cool in trailers when they sync things up to music, like the new Kingsman trailer does this? You know how cool that feels? Well, this is an entire movie of that. The premise is that the main character, Baby, is a getaway driver, hence the name, who has tinnitus, and to drown it out, listens to music. And he has to listen to music constantly, and he uses it to help him drive. And so all of the car chases are set to music and perfectly timed with the music. And it is super cool. I have not left a theater feeling so amped since Mad Max Fury Road. Like, it's that same feeling of, you know, I wanted to be like speeding and out of the parking lot and banking corners and things like that. Like, it's amazing. And the car stunts in this are just amazing. The coolest part, one thing that I think everyone should know going in, is that all of the stunts are practical effects. There's no CGI. So when you see some of the absolutely crazy things that they do with cars in this movie, all of that is real. You know, they may have used pneumatics and things to help it along occasionally, but that's all real cars doing those things. So that makes it great. It also does something that I talked about last week with Wonder Woman, where it just lets you see the action. It's not constantly doing shaky cam and shit to make things faster. It's just these gorgeous long shots of cars going very fast and doing things they shouldn't do with awesome music. And honestly, that's enough. It also does have a very good story, a very well-written, witty, funny script. Kevin Spacey's in it, and he does an amazing job, as he almost always does. Everyone in it does a good job. Jamie Foxx is in it in probably the least Jamie Foxx role he's ever taken. I will give this sort of warning. All of Edgar Wright's other films / TV shows have been comedies. They may occasionally, like The World's End went to some pretty fucking dark places towards the end, but it was still overall a comedy. Likewise, Shaun of the Dead has some genuinely scary horror moments, but is a comedy. All his previous movies have been comedies first with other elements. This movie is not. It does have jokes, and they're funny jokes, but mostly it's this kind of dark thriller. And I didn't mind that, but if you go in expecting it to be laugh-a-minute, you are going to be disappointed. So don't expect that. Just expect a really, really good heist movie with car chases, and it's great, and I think it's my favorite movie of the year so far, and I seriously doubt that anything's gonna top it, and I'm probably gonna go see it again tonight. It's a great movie, and you should go see it if you like any of the things I've described. That's really all I've got, so why don't we go ahead and go to commercial break. The Hey Poor Podcast is the official podcast of HeyPoorPlayer.com, your one-stop shop for video game and pop culture news, reviews, and editorials. If you like what you've heard here and don't want to wait till next Wednesday to hear more, that's a place where you can read all of our writing and the full reviews of some of the games we've talked about on the show. Again, Nathan's review of Sega Hard Girls Super Dimension Hyper Final Mix Remix Sonic and Knuckles.
Skull Idol Festival. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Featuring Dante from the Devil May Cry series was really, really hilarious, so seriously, check that out. You can also follow us at Hey Poor Player on Twitter, Facebook, and you can check out our YouTube channel, which is the home of Second Opinion, I Coleman is Doomed, a whole bunch of stuff. A whole bunch of Let's Plays, features, and reviews, separate from the site proper. Beyond that, Anthony, where can people find you on the internet?
I am currently at Virtual Svivy, where I've been tweeting various things, including just, what was the last thing I tweeted besides the Mr. Tumnus thing that I said on this podcast, because I'm egotistical like that.
I think either you or Nathan was tweeting about Frog Anime Girl.
That would be Nathan.
Oh, that's totally me.
I like Frog
what
Anime Girl.
What is that?
Okay, so in My Hero Academia, there's a character where everyone has superpowers, and there's this one girl whose superpower, she gets things like that is like a frog, so she can extend her tongue really like long, and she can like stick mm-hmm. to walls and can jump really high, and she can spit out her stomach and hold it in her hands. It's cool. She's a cool character, and there's some very awkward hentai of her that I don't like to see.
Of course,
she's a precious angel. No. I kind of don't like. I don't like it either. No, I'm not condoning that.
That phrase. Anyway, continue. Oh, wait, it's me talking.
It's you.
So you can see me tweet about other things. Nathan, where are you at?
You can find me on Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram on Blazer Hoodie. I'm most active on Twitter. You can find my you can find me on YouTube. Personal channel is Nathaniel Terencio, and I think, what I also wanted to say. I stream personally more now on my Twitch channel, NateGear, NateGear, all one word. That's not a Netgear reference, that's actually a Neptunia reference to Nepgear. Of course, no one's going to get that because, like, Neptunia is a trash franchise. But anyway, yeah, so you can find me on there. I stream a little more now. I stream a lot of Smash Bros. Now because my friends come over more often than not now, and we just play some Smash Bros, and we just decide to stream once in a while. So, yeah, that's cool.
Alrighty then. Yeah, and you can find me at Last Space Marine on Twitter. It's the best place to follow me. You can also check out my other podcast at starwurstcast.tumblr.com. starwurstcast.tumblr.com. That's where we watch an episode of Star Wars The Clone Wars every week, me and my friend Joe, and we talk about why it's probably one of the worst animated shows that has ever been created ever. Holy shit, what a fucking tire fire. Again, the YouTube channel is I'm probably gonna increasingly transition into just being a full-time video person. And doing fewer and fewer reviews.
Yep.
You can check out I, Coleman is Doomed, which is the stupidly popular dumb show where I play Doom in the dumbest way possible. And you can check out Second Opinion, and I wanted to bring that up because last week's episode on Spec Ops The Line's gameplay is probably, I think it's the best we've ever done. It's certainly my favorite. I think that it was really, I was really proud of it. I thought it was well-reasoned. And I enjoyed, I kind of wish we could do more episodes that are diving into a very, very specific aspect of a game. In that case, it was just the gameplay. And I'm really proud of it. So go ahead and give that a watch, won't you? We also have the Hey Poor Player forums, which you can find by clicking the link on our main site, and that's something we're trying to get started as a way to interact with the Hey Poor Player community. Unlike reading articles or watching videos with that block off, the forums don't benefit us directly in a monetary sense, but it is a great way for you to get in touch with us. So if you want to call Nathan a weeb, or if you want to, I don't know, ask me more about Baby Driver, because I'm more willing to talk about that. Or if you want to call Anthony a weeb, the forums are where you can talk to us directly about all of our work. It's also where you can ask questions that will get featured right here on the show, like... Candiness, participant on the Hey Poor Player forums, asks, what's a type of game you'd like to see more of? I know Eyes mentioned pirate games. So a game, a genre, or a style that we see very rarely, or even not at all, that you would that you want to see more, that you think there should be more of.
Okay. Anyone got an answer immediately? I'm still thinking a little bit.
Properly I think I have an answer, done but... story element puzzle games like Catherine.
Where, oh wow, that's a good one.
Where the story actually incorporates within the own platforming aspects of Catherine. Where it makes sense rather than, let's just say, Puyo Puyo Tetris, which has the most mind-numbingly story of all time, so I've been just skipping it every time I play it, because it doesn't make any sense. It doesn't work well. They just added a story because people thought it needed a story. And you could tell it was done well off, whereas with Catherine, and to a lesser extent other games, where you can tell that it's the whole gameplay is built upon telling the story it's trying to convey. So more of that would be great. I'm still waiting for Alice to make a Catherine 2. Catherine Harder, but that's not happening yet.
I really hope they don't call it that.
Fucking Catherine 2 Electric Boogaloo. Let's go, Atlas.
Sure. Nathan?
I think I have two answers for this. I think the first one is I want more Super Smash Brothers or like Brawler type games that aren't like Super Smash Brothers based. I think the thing like a lot of indies are doing now is like taking, they're like, I don't know. I think like what I've been seeing is like taking Melee and making it more competitive or making it more balanced or whatever. And like the thing is there's another game that's coming out by Wave Dash Studios. And I forgot the name, but like they're making a game that's supposed to be like that. They haven't really showed like any footage, but they've been showing like art and like kind of keeping up, like doing developer blogs. And then we have like Rivals of Aether, which is very good. Like most of these games are good. Mm-hmm. Most of these games that want to be like Melee but balanced are very good, except Brawlout.
Who summons Paco?
No.
But anyway, yeah, most of these are good, and I think like there's enough of that because we don't need like five Melee clones or like five games that want to be Melee but balanced. I think like I would like to see more like Brawler type fighting games that take a different angle or don't try to be Super Smash Brothers, you know, like as much as like people don't like PlayStation All-Stars, I don't, at least it tried kind of to do something weird and different, even if it didn't like nail that execution. So more Brawler games that aren't Super Smash Brothers like inspired completely, you know, like the percentage bars and like knocking people out of the stage, you know, like I think Brawlhalla does something fairly different, you know, considering. So yeah, just something a little more different. And then my second answer would be, I kind of want more, and this is going to be such a Nathan answer, but like, I want more idle games that aren't like the freaking like phone gacha games. Like I would like, cause like back in the day, like when like original Idle Master was out, like they had like PlayStation 2 games and those were like legitimately good games and they were full games, you know, like now most, like rhythm idle games are like the gacha Love Live thing, and as much as I get why they do that because it makes like a shit ton of money when you can just like have people like spend money just to get cards that don't affect gameplay, but I would just like a full-fledged, like, you know, I would pay like for a $50 idle game as long as it's like a full game, you know, with like a lot of songs and like a decent story, you know what I mean? But
Nintendo tried to do that and it sold like 12 copies with Tokyo Mirage Sessions, so that's probably one of the reasons they don't do that.
Yeah,
that
no,
was an extremely idle game that only I and I think Francis bought, and that's it in the entirety of North America.
Yeah, so. and in general, idle games are like super niche in general. So like dedicating like a full studio and like a full team to like a sort of like full price idle game is not profitable. But you know, like again, this is something I'd like to see. I'm not counting for it, but it'd be nice. Like something like a full fledged like Idol Master game in the West would be nice. I think I'd just like to see more of them in the West because they're still popular in Japan.
So, well, it's hard to do like with those because of all the licensing as well.
Yeah, no, that's
which
that's
is why
true.
Like only Hatsune Miku comes over here is because they basically own the rights to almost all the songs because of the programming. So
yeah, true.
Do you have anything?
Yeah,
The problem is that the question asker said, I know Eyes mentioned pirate games, which, I mean, that is my go-to answer for this, is I think that, like, pirates and, you know, pirate mythology is something that's really cool and is fucking tailor-made for video games, and that we don't see enough. Although there were two at E3 this year. I don't know, I've been trying to think of other things, but a lot of the genres I liked that I, or still do like, that I thought were in trouble have kind of, like, made big comebacks. Like, a few years ago I would have said point-and-click adventure games, but those have made a huge, those have had a huge resurgence. Maybe, like, I would have said old-school, fast-paced first-person shooters, but likewise, so, I don't know, pirate games, maybe more games that do the pathologic thing, or Spec Ops: The Line, as we talked about in Second Opinion, where they're not trying to be fun, where they kind of set traditional gameplay aside and really try to explore, like, really sort of darker themes. But I don't know, if we, I wouldn't want gaming to just become that. I mean, we, because most people are going to do it wrong, and I think it's kind of great that we have a few examples of people trying to do that and doing it really well, rather than, you know, a bunch of people doing it crappily. So, yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think it is just pirate games. Yeah. Just, I'm always excited to see any pirate games.
Yar.
Yeah. I think it's important to note that, like, the question is, like, what games do we want to see more of? I think it's also, like, we want to see more of it done well also. It's not like,
oh, sure, yeah, certainly, yeah, certainly.
I'd like a new Fire Emblem game that doesn't be complete trash, but I don't know if I'm ever going to get that again, so, yeah.
Yeah, no, I, like,
that's
here's the thing.
My
I'm
other
not the
answer.
Biggest, I'm not the biggest Fire Emblem dude, but, like, the thing is, I played most of them. I'm not going to say I've beaten, like, all the ones I played, but, like, it has become, like, it's literally just Waifu Wars now at this point. Like,
I've been kinda regretfully playing the phone game because I like drawing games almost as much as I hate spending money on phone games. And yeah, there's a lot of, oh, here, we're going to announce, like, here's four more Fates characters, or here's a whole bunch of the fucking characters from Awakening. And we have a total of two characters from other games because people didn't play those because we didn't fucking advertise them in the West.
Yeah.
So, I'd want that. But otherwise, that's a different topic that I've talked about on this podcast too much already.
Mm-hmm. You know what? I think what I'll answer for this, something that'd be cool to see more of right now, is more story-driven shooters. We still get a few of those, but a lot of them are either the Doom, Serious Sam's Bogus Detour, like, story doesn't matter, just have fun, which I enjoy, don't get me wrong, or just, you know, most shooters coming out today are competitive online shooters that exist for about a month and then everyone forgets about, where the story campaign is usually extremely secondary.
Yeah.
We still get a few with, you know, good linear single player campaigns, like Titanfall 2. And I know everyone's going to bring up Wolfenstein: The New Order, but I've already explained why I don't like that much. But it would be cool to see some really embracing story again, and remembering that first-person shooters can have a good story and a story focus. So there you go. Ken S. also asks a food question, which is surprisingly timely. Hamburgers or hot dogs? And I've been thinking about this one, and it's fucked me up.
Because I mean hamburgers, because I can't handle regular hot dogs. They smell too bad that I can't eat them. So I'm going to go with hamburgers. I will say the Frankfurt, like the actual, like, thick hot dogs I can eat, but the like typical, like, American, oh, here, we're going to put this in a giant pot, eat this, you fat fucks, I'm not going to eat. I can't handle those. So hamburgers for sure.
Sure, Nathan?
Oh, sorry for all the background noise. I think for me, I think hamburger, but that's only because, like, for barbecue things like this, I make my own hamburgers. I don't buy, like, the store, like, the pre-made ones. I, like, you know, like, get the ground beef and actually put, like, ingredient, you know, like, herbs and stuff on it. So,
sure.
Yeah, I think, like, that's the thing. I think with, like, hot dogs, like, you really, like, you have a lot of selection, but, like, 80% of hot dogs aren't that good, and like they're passable at best, you know. So yeah, I think not that I dislike either, but I think hamburger for me.
This, like I said, this one's been fucking me up. This is hard for me because I really love both. And maybe part of the reason I like hot dogs more than you is because, being Jewish, I can't eat the, like, pork and insect lips hot dogs that you get for cheap. I've only ever had, like, the more expensive but better all-beef hot dogs.
Yeah.
And turkey dogs. I actually like turkey dogs sometimes. It depends on the brand. I think Oscar Mayer's turkey dogs are good, though. But I think I'm going to have to go with hamburgers, and the reason is this, because I grew up in Kansas City, and Kansas City is the best place in the world to get beef. We actually provide much of the world with its beef, as well as with almost all the world with its wheat, and like, you can get beef fresher in Kansas and in Kansas City than you can anywhere else, and when you get like a proper Kansas City hamburger that is cooked just right and it's fresh and it's, oh man, that's got to be the best ever than hot dogs that get processed to within an inch of their life. So yeah, unanimously for hamburgers, I guess.
Team hamburger. Woo. Not that we don't like hot dogs. I do like hot dogs. Just
I don't. No, I'll eat either.
All hot dogs are queens.
All hot dogs deserve
to respect hot dogs.
All hot dogs deserve to go to the glue factory to feed the horses before we slaughter them.
God. Let me tell you what, though, it's hot dogs, you know, by themselves are okay. Hot dogs on a bun with like ketchup and onions and relish and all that good stuff is good. But the real like the strongest play is putting hot dogs in mac and
no,
cheese.
No, it's not.
That
do
is
not
the
ruin,
best.
Do
yes, it
not
is.
Ruin
Shut
mac
the
and
fuck
cheese
up.
With your
that
disgusting.
Is literally okay. that all is right. the all best right. food. Polka dot mac and cheese is what. Is the only food available in heaven. It is the nectar of the fucking gods.
First of all, right. like, that is I'm not Filipino. The ambrosia of heaven.
I just want to say right now, I'm Filipino, and we put hot dogs in our spaghetti. So, like, I just want to say that right now. So, I kind of get where I is coming from, but also...
No, you use real meat, but I can't eat it, so I can't say anything like that. So, sorry.
All you need, listen, half a stick of butter... Mac and cheese, the cheese powder, hot dogs. Especially if you need something cheap that is also fucking amazingly delicious. That's how you do it, right there. Mm-hmm. And then you die at the age of 32, but it's worth it. Anyway, but that's old news. Let's get on to the news. It's the worst segue I've ever done in my life. So do you guys want to talk microtransactions, or do you guys want to talk mods?
Because they're a trick question, it's both of them.
Well, listen, this ain't Bethesda. Let's start with the microtransaction thing. So loot boxes have been in the news quite a bit lately. And I'm kind of disappointed we didn't have Jay here, because Overwatch is really the game that popularized this. These are microtransactions where instead of just getting to buy the cosmetic skin you want or whatever, you have to buy a box that has a random chance of getting whatever you want. It's like crates in TF2, I guess, except that in TF2 you could also just buy the stuff. So... Jay has defended these in Overwatch in the past. I am staunchly against them, and not just because they're in Overwatch. In general, I would say Jay takes a more lenient approach towards microtransactions, feeling like they're okay if they're cosmetic, and I don't think that microtransactions belong in any full-price game ever. I don't even like them in free games, but I will tolerate them there. I guess the first thing we can talk about is that Ubisoft promised that microtransactions would never come to The Division, their full-price multiplayer game that few people really, really loved and most people didn't give a shit about. And they had a big update this week and included microtransactions. And not just microtransactions, but these loot crates, which they call encrypted caches. And being Ubisoft and always having to be one step shittier, they even had the audacity to talk about why, to like, they presented this as a feature, like this was an awesome new thing that was being added, instead of just, you know, instead of what it was, which is trying to get more money from people.
That's why it's awesome. It's awesome for them.
Exactly. There's also a new microtransaction currency. You know how this goes. You will either get the crates just from playing the game or from buying real money for it. There's also a premium vendor added where you can buy vanity items. That was actually a few months ago. Well, not a few months ago. They already had introduced a premium vendor a few months ago where you could buy cosmetic items, so it's this whole exploitative microtransaction deal. And then the other story about this is that Star Wars Battlefront 2, which Jay called the best game of E3, is also getting loot boxes, but these loot boxes are actually going to affect gameplay.
Nope, those can fuck off.
They're not just cosmetic stuff. The way they'll work in Battlefront 2 is you'll get a daily crate for logging in every day. You can buy more with real money dollars. They always will contain star cards. Sometimes they will get more credits, microtransaction money, or crafting parts. And the star cards have 5 tiers, common, uncommon, rare, epic, legendary, and they basically, like, affect gameplay. They will temporarily boost your base abilities. They're like the shitty cards in the old Battlefront game. So it'll be something like, you know, maybe you have better defense, or you do more damage with lightsabers, or whatever. I'll let you guys take it from here.
Anthony, you want to go first?
Stop making people pay to beat your game. That's the whole point of the game. Stop. I sound like a little whiny bitch, but that's just because I'm tired of hearing about this. And I'm tired that people keep on paying for it because they know it's the only way to do it at this point.
The companies are smart. It's not like a million people paying for the microtransaction. It's like a couple people paying like hundreds upon thousands of dollars for that shit.
Yeah, I'm okay with the cosmetic stuff, because that really doesn't affect anything. I'm on Jay's side with the cosmetic stuff. I know, and I'm upset, if you promise that you're not going to put it in the game, put it in yourself, you can go fuck off. But for cosmetics, I don't really care. If it's to, like, increase your defense or give you a higher shot rate, don't.
Yeah.
And we already know that this game's going to sell out the wazoo, so...
Yeah. Here's my problem with it is largely a problem of normalization, and I think that's kind of what we're seeing here. Like, because here's the thing: loot boxes are explicitly and exclusively, despite all the Overwatch fanboys who bent over backwards to defend them, which Jay, to be clear, did not do. Obviously, this is a conversation I really thought he'd be here for, but like, many Overwatch fanboys, like, bend over backwards to explain why it was a good thing. Jay simply argued that it wasn't a horrible thing. But my problem is that they are an explicitly anti-consumer thing, right? It's one thing to have microtransactions where you can just buy shit if you want it. That is not the worst thing in the world, you know? Many games are doing that now, and as much as I wish they wouldn't, c'est la vie. But the loot crates are just... the only reason they exist is to get you to spend more money to get the thing that you actually want. It is explicitly... it's gambling is all it is. And I really am concerned about us, like, making these sorts of things normal and being like, oh, it's okay because... you know, one thing you're saying that it's okay in Overwatch where it's just cosmetics, next thing you know, Battlefront 2 is going to let you pay to randomly be better at the game.
Yeah.
That's my big problem. That's why I feel like, that's why I want to take such a hardline stance against anything, even if it doesn't ruin the game, even if it doesn't hugely affect the game. When you let something like this slide, or even worse, say that it's good, then games publishers are just going to find a way to make it even shittier. And again, I think that's kind of what we're seeing here. I think the fact that these two announcements came in the same week is pretty telling. But I'm sorry, Nathan. I believe I cut you off.
Oh, no, it's fine. Like, it's pretty much the same stance. I'm actually, like, with Jay and Anthony on this, like, about microtransactions in general. I mean, I was a League of Legends player for a long time, and I pretty much...
But that's a free game.
Yeah, that's a free game.
Right?
And, like,
that's what I'm saying. You're not paying... Yeah. You didn't pay... But what the division cost? 50,
oh, yeah,
60
yeah,
bucks
exactly.
Beforehand.
And, like, then that's the thing, is, like, I can understand that. See, like, again, like, microtransactions aren't inherently bad, but, like, we're seeing more of it, and we're seeing more of it, like, being abused to this extent. And I think my biggest problem is that, like, I don't think there's ever been a scenario where I have been okay with microtransactions when it affected, like, gameplay, because there are inherent gameplay design things that you're just going to have to sacrifice for the sake of, like, microtransactions, which is why I don't like free-to-play games inherently also, because you are going to have, like, to sacrifice something on a design standpoint. But regardless of that, it's just a shitty business practice in general. The fact that they... And the thing is, like, Battlefront 2 was... Like, the announcement was just such a huge, like, apology, right? It was just, like, apology game for the shittiness that was Battlefront 1, You know, like, Battlefront 2 is what Battlefront 1 should have been, pretty much, right? And then they go out and announce, like, oh, we're putting microtransactions, also it affects gameplay, also fuck you. Like, that's not...
Mm-hmm.
That's, like... I'm not even surprised that, like, EA would do that. Like, EA would just be like, we're sorry, here's... You know, we're making it better, and then, like, doing this, I'm like, yep, not surprised. It's not surprising. And Ubisoft doing that for The Division, it's because, like, the people who only play The Division are these whales who will pay the money for that, because The Division has
pretty
no player
much,
base
yeah.
anymore. Like, they did one good update, and it did, like, make the game better to a large extent, but then it really was just, like, an H1Z1, like, player unknown battleground, like, mode, and you could just play those games instead of playing The Division.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like... Not surprised, thoroughly disappointed. I think that I feel like that, like, it's just like you said, it's just to make money, and like the fact that, and The Division is obviously doing it because, like, it only has a player base of whales who will just pay that money, and Battlefront 2 is not even out, so that's bullshit.
There you go. Yeah, I don't want to say, like, this spells doom for Battlefront 2, which a bunch of other people have been doing, because that's how this industry works. Everything's either in black and white. But I think this is a pretty unilaterally shitty thing. And I think it will definitely affect gameplay. The only question will be to what extent.
Yeah.
The question will be how many people are willing to spend money on these things.
Yeah.
That's going to determine how pay-to-win it is. As with all online multiplayer games,
yeah.
It's going to be determined by how much people are willing to be assholes.
Yep.
But considering that it just... I've been cynical about Battlefront 2. I continue to be cynical about Battlefront 2. And it just... It feels like they're trying to do the same fucking thing, just being sneakier about this time. Instead of saying up front, oh yeah, this is $110 DLC bullshit, it's like they're going, oh no, we have all this free content, and there's more content at launch, and it's going to be such a good game at E3. And then 3 weeks after E3, when not everyone is paying attention to them, going, oh, by the way, we're gonna have loot crates, and they're basically going to decide who's good at the game and who's not, so you're all going to have to pay if you actually want to be viable. And since they're random, you're still gonna be paying a lot. Now, this is me being incredibly cynical. Could be that it's not gonna be a big deal, but based on everything we know right now, it really seems, I don't know how this isn't going to be a pretty sizable problem. So there you go.
Yep.
We a few weeks ago, we talked about Open 4, which was threatened by Take-Two. It is the most popular tool used to mod Grand Theft Auto Online, mods being largely what's keeping games alive. And Take-Two sent a cease and desist claiming that it was illegal, which it was not. The creators had actually bent over backwards to make it legal, even making it work with Russian civil law, of all the things. Open4 is back. They put the website back online. They released a new update. And Rockstar put out a statement about Open4 that suggests that some sort of understanding has been reached between Take-Two and the makers of Open4. They said that Take-Two has agreed to not take legal action against third-party projects. So I don't know that there's a lot to say about that, but that's cool. That's kind of exciting.
It's refreshing to hear that something good happened within, like, the modding community. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't know. It's just like, look, I get it. Like, I 100% get it sometimes. I wasn't here for this story, so, like, what was the issue? Like, why was that even, like, a thing? Like, why did Take-Two...
Nobody has any idea.
Like,
Take-Two just decided after Open4 had been being used for years and years, suddenly that it was illegal now based on nothing.
Yeah.
Nobody's really sure why. It's not like they're creating really any new content for Grand Theft Auto Online.
Okay.
It was a very bizarre situation.
Yeah. Okay. Yes, because I'm a little unfamiliar with it. I was like, is it breaking, like, the servers? Is it, like, messing with the players? Like,
no,
it's like, if it's not,
there's,
if it's not doing anything like that, then
just
I don't
fuck
understand.
You that's all it
yeah,
was it
okay.
was the same it was the same thing with Project M, where it was just like, go fuck yourself.
Yeah, and if anything, it made people buy Brawl more, because no one's gonna play Brawl anyway. But yeah, like, it's refreshing to hear that something good happened within something in a modding community, because usually they just get shafted by everyone nowadays, because apparently mods have no value, even though, like, they're probably one of the most valuable tools for longevity of a game in general. Like, yeah, mm-hmm. I don't know. We've had this discussion before. But
I think that it's heartening. Like, we talked about the wargaming issue, and then they issued an apology for that and retracted their threats against that YouTuber. We talked about the this GTA 5 modding issue, and that's been retracted. And I don't think that it's, like, because of the Hapor podcast. I really don't. We have 500 downloads on a good week. I think that this shows why it's important to talk about these stories, to boost them. Even though last week, you and I, Nathan, had a very frank and very open and very good conversation about the fact that It feels like we talk about the exact same things every week, the exact same problems with the games industry. I think this is a fine example of why you have to keep talking about them, why you have to raise a stink every time, because they obviously are listening.
Yeah.
Rockstar wasn't even involved in this previously, and now, based on their statement, it seems like they sort of took Take-Two in hand and said, no, mods are what are keeping our game alive. Keep it open. They did actually also clarify in this statement that apparently Take-Two's problem was, they are now saying that Open4 enables malicious mods that allow harassment of players.
Okay.
They're just trying to find something to save their ass.
Yeah,
I think so.
It's totally just trying to cover their ass, but yeah, well, whatever.
I mean, God forbid anyone harass anyone in an online game.
Yeah. I mean, man, you must be, like, a grade A, like, let's just say hypothetically that ever happened, you must be a grade A asshole to mod a game just to purpose, like, to harass someone even further when you could just, like, literally call them
what
a cunt.
What even mod is that? What mod... would that be? Like,
it replaces all the car horns with the esports, like, fucking horns. Like,
MLG.
Like, that's harassment.
Every time you turn on the radio, it's just Rick Astley just blasting, never gonna give you up. Every channel.
That'd be great.
That's a good-ass mod. Yeah, that's a good-ass mod. But,
But nobody's doing that. They're probably just doing, like, bug fixes, new content, and nude mods.
Yeah, I mean,
the Holy Trinity.
The Holy Trinity.
Mods.
The thing that's in bug every fix, Skyrim
the Holy
mod.
Trinity. Bug fixes developers should have done, new levels, almost none of which are good, and nude mods.
Yep. This every Skyrim mod, pretty much, more or less.
And
okay.
And mods that let you kill kids.
Actually, lies. Sometimes Skyrim mods are purposely to break your game and make it even like 300 times worse, like the Thomas the Tank Engine Dragon mod.
Excuse me, worse.
Or the
Oh, it's good. The Thomas the Tank Engine mod is good, but when there's like five Thomases in the fucking same like screen, it breaks your game.
Or the Hulk Hogan wearing a sombrero hat that says "Oh yeah" and shoots out laser beams.
That was actually Macho Man
Randy
Savage.
I don't know
Savage.
Wrestling.
That was Macho Man Randy Savage.
Oh, God. Rest in peace. Anyway.
Rest in peace. The cream rises to the top.
Anything else?
Well, there's Anime Expo, but you're going to have to take the lead on that because right, I really don't know anything about it.
Anime Expo is the biggest fucking weeaboo ass convention out there these days.
And that's actually their tagline.
Yeah, so
come to Anime Expo, the biggest fucking weeaboo ass.
It's still technically going on until the end of today. Yeah, until the end of today. Basically, it's an excuse for a bunch of fucking weeaboos to go ahead and be like, hey, we have a month. We want to fucking do stuff? Let's go ahead and do stuff together. And then they announce a bunch of things. So, Studio Trigger, the ones who I talked about with Little Witch Academia, announced that they're going to do a bunch of new shows coming out there, which is pretty fucking cool. They're doing one based off of an old tokusatsu show, which I'm excited to hear. Nathan, they announced, I think they announced the release date of Nathan's Horse anime there as well. So,
I'm ready to fall in love, guys. I'm ready to find true love in this 2D centaur.
Inside the 2D centaur, because we're gonna cut open like a goddamn tauntaun and put you in it. The company, what is it, Sekai Project? They're the ones who do a bunch of the visual novels that come out to the U.S. on Steam. They announced seven games to be coming out this year and next year. So if you can handle fucking visual novels and want to read for the next 20 years, that's coming out. In terms of, like, big news that people are actually going to care about, the legal streaming of Fate Apocrypha from the Fate Stay series, that started airing in Japan this past week, I think, just a couple days ago, as of this recording. They announced that it is going to be officially coming via Netflix in November after the show ends again, because fuck Netflix and doing that shit. They also said that Little Witch Academia, this next 13 episodes is going to be around the same time. So we gotta wait a long time for that. And then the last big news is Fooly Cooly Seasons 2 and 3, which is big for all the people who really liked that back when it aired on Cartoon Network. It was a big deal. I never saw it. I don't understand the appeal of it that much, but I do understand that a lot of people love it, and I don't know enough about Fooly Cooly to give my opinion on it. I do know the next two seasons are coming out on to Cartoon Network in 2018, though, and people are cautiously optimistic about it because it does have a lot of the same people who worked on it coming out and doing the same thing. So that's all the major news that I've seen. Oh, and then people dressed up as the person who did the voice of, god damn it, I forgot, Anne from Persona 5 actually went to a bunch of cosplay events and did a panel with her talking about her character from Persona 5, and that was cool too. You could probably find that on YouTube. So there's all those news, a bunch of fucking weeaboo ass shit that a lot of it I don't care about. Like all the fucking visual novels that are coming. How are you gonna release 7,000 plus page visual novels? I don't understand that. Like, I literally don't know how people can read all of that. And I bet all of... And I bet, because I didn't look at which ones are actually coming out, I bet all of them are just the fucking Catgirl fucking spinoffs that Nathan loves. Neko Para.
Fun fact, I was trying to review Necropara for this site last month, but like with the but I took like 2 games and E3 and then this interview, so I never got the time.
Thank you.
I didn't. Plus, there's no point because it's literally the same fucking game. They just like changed up. Like they just added 2 more cats. That's literally fucking it. Like
Nathan, if you review Necropara on the website, I would make a fake account and taunt you via comments on it until that would be taken down.
Are you kidding? If you reviewed Necropara, especially if you picked a choice header image, it would get 100,000 views.
It would, but it's kind of...
It would be the most... It would dwarf everything I've ever done.
It's the same fucking game. It's literally the same fucking game. They just added 2 more cats and a cat orgy, I think. I'm not...
Nathan, there's your YouTube views. A poor player where you get to view cat orgies and video game news, I guess.
I guess.
All you would have to do is record yourself playing, no commentary. You're gonna play it anyway. We all fucking know that. Just turn on OBS and again, dwarf everything I've ever done.
Here's the thing. I own the game.
With a 30-minute playthrough of Necropara, you could make all of the work I've put into Second Opinion be
for
nothing.
We already know he has the game. He fucking helped make the abomination that is the OVA that's coming out.
Oh, I did help.
That's right. Nathan Terenzio personally contributed. He is the voice of one of the cat girls.
Oh, yeah.
He's the voice of Vanilla. Mm. That's why it's so attractive, I guess.
I'm actually Ozkey. Excuse you. No, just kidding.
I don't know who that is.
It's the Spongy Shark.
Can you give us a taste of some of the voice work you did, Nathan, right here, right
now? No, I am not. I am not doing anything of that
sort.
Can
you please give us a voice chant so I can go ahead and get you guys to just isolate that so I can have a new ringtone?
I have some self-respect, okay? Some, like, a little
Since
semblance
when?
Of it.
Nathan,
a little semblance of it.
You're excited for a centaur anime. There's no such thing as self-respect in our lives.
Hey, and a vending machine manga.
It's a light novel. It's actually a book.
All centaurs
if that,
are queens.
That makes it a lot worse, actually. It's an actual
Man,
fucking...
light novels are getting popular.
I don't
like
it.
I'm more now.
Like, the only good ones are Haruhi, Spice and Wolf, and the Bakemonogatari series. There's not a single other good one.
See, like, I can't even disagree, because literally, I've read a few, because my sister buys a shit ton of visual novels, and I'm like, all of these suck. Why do people buy this?
It's poorly written. Like, the fucking Konosuba, which has a great anime, their light novel has the word cook in it no less than twice.
I think we've gotten really off topic.
I don't care.
We have a topic? I'm just mad you wouldn't do a cat girl voice. You'll do Nico Nico Nathan every week, but a cat girl is too far.
I don't even know like what like the Nekos do other than like neon and then occasionally moan. Like, I don't know what other cat features they have other than like the ears and then occasionally neon and then like, oh, it's like, God.
There you go, your new text tone, everyone. Remix that, put it on the internet, songify it.
So oh, no, they say master.
You've done
half a second of him going, yeah, and I will make that my ringtone.
You've done your video or it didn't fucking happen.
I will do it.
Calling you out, post it on Twitter.
Do it.
Video of you getting a text message and the sound being, meh.
Do it. Isolate the audio. Oh, no, I will really do it. Bad. Don't judge.
Isolate
don't
the
test
audio.
Me.
It's a challenge.
Alright, I'll fucking do it. Alright. And with that gauntlet thrown, I think it's over. It's done. Go home. First, we'll do a shout-out. Every week, we like to give a shout-out to somebody who is not on the podcast and talk about, but does work for Hey Poor Player and talk about why they're great. And this particular week, I want to talk about Jay, actually, which is kind of cheating, but he is not on the podcast. The thing is, Jay's been doing a ton of work lately. He's also been getting a new job. He's been very busy. And in fact, it will probably affect his ability to be on the podcast going forward. We've been talking about it. I'm not saying for sure that, like, this is it. He's never going to be on again, but it's going to be a little difficult. And so I wanted to just sort of just sort of say thank you, Jay, for doing great work with E3, doing great work in general, being a managing editor and taking that role very seriously, and helping people write their articles, and I think improving the quality of our writing across the board, doing good writing himself, being, honestly, I think, a better host of this podcast than I am sometimes. I tend to stumble over my words, and Jay always keeps us on track, keeps us moving forward, keeps us energized, and I think that's great. And I think that you are a great part of the team, buddy.
We love you,
even
bud.
Even though we disagree on pretty much everything, like, in terms of what games and movies we think are good or bad, I still always respect your opinion. And you are totally, totally wrong about Captain America, the Winter Soldier, and Iron Man 3.
We gonna get lit again, Jay. Someday. Someday, we'll meet up at another, like, big thing. We're gonna get lit again. Maybe less lit. I don't know.
We have talked on and off about doing that, so that may happen one day.
We'll get lit again.
The Hard Lit Podcast.
I'm going to sleep and I'm going to hear that. That just haunts my dreams.
No, you're going to hear Nyan over and over again.
Nog will be hearing that when my boss asks me where I am. And I just won't answer my text messages just to hear that.
But until next time, I've been I. Coleman.
I've been fucking dead.
And I've been Nathan, Neon. Oh, God, we're...
All right, there it is. That's the better Neon, because it got a better quality. So just give me that. Yeah. Not the Nico, Nathan all right. part. But
my career died before it started with a Nico and a Neon.
Where the fuck
Thank you very much for listening. And milk that waifu train one sunny day.
At some point in this podcast, I threw my glasses across the room and now I can't see.
If only you couldn't hear either.
If only.
Where's the stop key? There it is.